President Trump delivered his State of the Union address last night after a shutdown-related postponement. The speech featured some notes of bipartisanship. He praised the criminal justice law he signed in December, vowed to fight childhood cancer, and committed to eliminate HIV in a decade. It also included a dose of division with attacks on socialism and abortion, a renewed pledge for a wall on the southern border, and a shot at the ongoing Russia investigation. What did you think of what Trump had to say? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What stood out most to you? How hopeful are you that President Trump and congressional Democrats could work together? Again, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Tommy Binion is the Vice President of Congressional and Executive Branch Relations with the Heritage Foundation. Tommy, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much. It's great to be with you.
And Ruth Conniff is here, editor-at-large of the Progressive Magazine. Ruth, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Let's get overall reactions. And Tommy, let's start with you, your reaction to this year's State of the Union address.
Well, the State of the Union accomplishes 10 different items and serves 10 different masters. So it really depends on what you were looking for last night. But the president scored high marks with American viewers, in the 70s in terms of approval rating for the actual speech. If you look at the content, it's pretty clear that that was the audience, the American people watching, and he looked like a unifier and he looked presidential. I think that was the goal and he accomplished it. It was clearly had a mixed reception inside the chamber, but he had a little fun with that along the way. It was an entertaining speech and I think overall achieved his goals.
And Ruth, your overall reaction?
Well, not surprisingly, I'm not in complete agreement with Tommy on this. I don't know who those 70% were who lasted for the whole hour and a half of the speech. But, the promise of the speech going into it was that it was going to be a uniting speech. He was going to be a unifier. And he really, knowing Donald Trump, that was a very high bar. It was particularly a high bar coming into a chamber he'd been barred from entering and then lost the power struggle to go ahead and give the State of the Union earlier during the government shutdown. He had lost the shutdown fight itself. And so really, Trump came in at a disadvantage because his biggest obstacle was his own challenged ego. And that never puts Trump in a unifying frame of mind. So he tried. He began with a few words about we need to work together and we need to achieve greatness. And then the speech went straight into the combative attack mode that we're all so familiar with in Donald Trump. And I thought it ranged all over the place. It was a very long speech. There were a couple of truly bizarre moments. I thought that his particularly lurid and graphic descriptions of abortions, of babies being whipped from wombs and executed by doctors was a weird departure for a guy who used to support Planned Parenthood. And also just particularly ghoulish in that context. I think it was very odd when he claimed credit for the large number of women in Congress, record number this year, mostly because of the backlash against the Trump administration. I thought it was great when those women stood up and applauded, mostly facing each other, and Trump tried to kind of keep the joke going. But it seemed to me that the joke was on him. He was in a chamber that has turned against him. The midterm election was a real rebuke of him. He hasn't been able to acknowledge that and recalibrate and talk about what a bipartisan consensus would look like. And so instead, we had the same old Trump launching a lot of attacks, a lot of vitriol. And at the end of the day, a whole long screed about immigrants who he equates with murderers and criminals. Very divisive speech, very negative speech. And I think kind of a reeling Trump the line that will always live on from the speech, I think, is his channeling Johnny Cochran to say we can't have peace and legislation if we have war and investigation. He's worried about people investigating him. He's obviously on the ropes.
And Tommy, did you see something significant when it came to that unity goal of the speech?
Yeah, I thought it was much more than a few words at the beginning of the speech that was a mere nod to unity. I thought that the real theme of the speech were the things that Americans together can be proud of. We can be proud of the current state of the economy. We can certainly be proud of the role or what happened on the beaches of Normandy. The president appealed to our sense of historic pride that we all can share together and then applied it to this moment. What are we going to accomplish next? I thought that the overall message of the speech, and that goes for just about every section, The beginning, he brought it back around in the end, but just about every section was an appeal to things that we can all agree on. I don't agree that the section on immigration was an attack on immigrants. I think it was a realistic look at a national crisis, something that we all ought to be worried about. And no, he's not talking about immigrants and calling them murderers. He's talking about violent gangs which control the flow of illegal immigrants on the border. This is something that has us all concerned. This isn't political rhetoric. This is something that Americans are concerned about. I think just about every section was gave something for everybody to worry about. He talked about drug prices. He talked about education. He talked about trade. He talked about the economy. All of this is something we all have a stake in. I didn't view the congratulatory tone in terms of the record number of women in Congress as political at all. I thought that he was celebrating a moment in American history. I think if you view it through a partisan lens, you could come to those conclusions. But I genuinely think the president's team, and indeed he himself, sat down to think about what is it that we can all agree on. Now, I'm speaking about everyday Americans watching this on TV on their couch in their basement. I'm not talking about the people in the chamber who view everything through a hyper-partisan lens. It's no surprise that they heard a divisive message, but I don't think that was the message that was delivered. And I think that's why the response from those polled last night was so universally positive.
Talking about the State of the Union address last night, Tommy Binion with us from the Heritage Foundation, Ruth Conniff from the Progressive Magazine. Want to key in on something we haven't talked about as much so far today here on the Ideas Network. Foreign policy in North Korea, the president announcing a new summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un scheduled for the end of the month. He praises his administration's handling of the North Korean issue. Here's a listen.
Our hostages have come home. Nuclear testing has stopped. And there has not been a missile launch in more than 15 months. If I had not been elected president of the United States, we would right now, in my opinion, be in a major war with North Korea.
A lot of attention to North Korea over the last couple of years. Ruth, your reaction to the president's statement there?
I mean, this was typical of Trump in that he was claiming personal credit for preventing the deaths of millions of Americans in a war that he alleges would have taken place with North Korea were he not in office. It's preposterous, but it's very typical of him. It's the overblown rhetoric, the fact that it focuses entirely on him, Trump, the individual, as the savior. And that was the tone of a lot of the speech. I mean, I don't think anybody thinks that we would have been in a war with North Korea under President Obama. I think a lot of people were worried we might start a war with North Korea under Trump. And there was kind of a relief that he backed off from his very provocative rhetoric early on in his administration. But, you know, these were very conclusory statements that he made repeatedly and mostly centering on him, Donald Trump, as the savior. And I just have to say to Tommy, like, the idea that Donald Trump is a nonpartisan unifying figure and that it's all the other people around him who are hyping up partisanship is just, it's just so counterfactual. It's really hard to bother to argue with it. The man is an enormously polarizing figure, an enormously self-aggrandizing figure. And I think a lot of what makes people very, very nervous in this country about what our future holds is that he seems to operate almost entirely from anxiety about what's going to happen to him individually and not concern for the great majority of people. On that working class issue, working class people and immigration, Trump really played that note. He laid it out very clearly. He sees immigration, particularly undocumented immigrants, as something that working class people are worried about. And he says that because he is a right-wing populist, and scapegoating immigrants has been a key to his election and his success. So when he holds up a family who, you know, where the grandparents were allegedly murdered by an undocumented immigrant, what he doesn't say is that the Washington Post just did a long story on how much lower the violent crime rate is among undocumented immigrants. So the idea that there's this huge threat to our safety, he wants to stir that up, and he wants people to be afraid and angry. But the reality is not there, and 60% of Americans in the last Gallup poll said they oppose his border wall. So I don't think the people are with him.
And Tommy, your reaction to the North Korea part of the speech?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Ruth is right that Donald Trump is a rather polarizing figure. But I think that the content of the address itself is neutral. And that explains why 76% of people approved of it, because it was an appeal to something we can all agree on. North Korea is no different than that, right? I think we're all relieved that tensions with North Korea are much lower than they were 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago. I really do think we were all anxious about that, and we're all relieved, and we're all relieved to hear that that is a trend that's going to continue with a summit next month. I don't think Americans are overly worried about who gets the credit for it. I think they're just glad it happened. I think they're tired of us fighting about who gets the credit for it. I think that that they're glad that we don't seem to be in any sort of imminent danger where it concerns North Korea, and I think that they want those trends to continue.
We're getting reaction to President Trump's State of the Union address. Tommy Binion is with us, along with Ruth Conniff. Tommy with the Heritage Foundation, Ruth with the Progressive Magazine. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What did you think of the president's speech last night? Do you have a question you want to throw out there for our guests? Call 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about last night's State of the Union address with our guests and with you. Ruth Conniff is editor-at-large with Progressive. Tommy Binion, vice president of Congressional Executive Branch Relations with the Heritage Foundation. You can join in with your reactions and questions at 800-642-1234. We'll go right to your calls now. We've got Jeff with us in Frederick. Jeff, hi.
Hi. To me, what I noticed wasn't so much what the speech was about, was about the behavior of the Democratic women dressed in white. To me, it didn't matter what Trump was talking about, whether it was the strong economy or American pride or protecting our borders or the unborn. But the only time those women showed any kind of emotion was when they were able to acknowledge themselves, to stand up and give themselves a round of applause.
Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. I'm a radio person. I listened. I didn't watch. But Ruth, your thoughts on what he had to say.
I mean, people saw reflected in that speech in that room sort of where they were originally. And I'm guessing that our caller is a Trump supporter who was not a huge Nancy Pelosi fan to begin with. But what I saw those Democratic women do is sit on their hands when Trump said that we're going to have an economy that's dependent on oil and fracking. And when he said that, you know, made that long, gory description of late-term abortion, and stand up and applaud when he said that women's workforce participation has increased, and then remain standing when he said there were more women than ever in Congress. So do I think that that was bad behavior? Absolutely not.
And Tommy, your reaction to some of the visuals we saw during the speech?
Yeah, well, I think what the American people are most frustrated about, they know that the Democrats hate the president. They're aware. They want them to get over it and work on solutions, right? So we just witnessed a government shutdown, 35 days, where it wasn't about the policy of border security. For decades, Democrats have supported a wall on the southern border, but when Trump proposes it, suddenly it's immoral. So I think the frustration that you're hearing in the caller there is that, yes, we know that the Democrats dislike President Trump, but they want them to get over it and find a way to work on policy. It's almost as if the most important thing to them is the personality of Donald Trump. And I think that the American people want the most important thing to the people elected to represent them to be the policies that benefit them. And I think their behavior last night was colored way more by Donald Trump's personality than the policies he was proposing. I find that to be rather disappointing.
Ruth, personality, Trump, not policy?
No. Trump owns the government shutdown. He said it very explicitly. He said it repeatedly. It was his shutdown. And he didn't get what he wanted. And he held 800,000 federal workers hostage. And a lot of those people really suffered, something he did not mention once in his speech last night. You know, nobody thinks that the Democrats caused the government shutdown. They simply didn't cave in to his blackmail. And as far as the border wall, I would be interested, Tommy, to see you produce a Democratic proposal for a massive multi-billion dollar wall all along the southern border of the United States. I mean, there's some real potential for bipartisan agreement on border security and a rational program to deal with the existing undocumented immigrants who prop up industries in this country. And Republicans and Democrats alike know that that's true. Here in Wisconsin, more than 50% of the labor on dairy farms is done by undocumented workers. So we need to acknowledge that reality and get somewhere with that. I think that's absolutely true. But the idea that somehow the Democrats are the barrier to that, and that Donald Trump, if only they would bend to his will when he held 800,000 people hostage to put up a medieval wall along the southern border, that would be the solution. I think it doesn't pass the smell test, and that's why 60% of Americans are against it.
Quick response, Tommy, before we go to another caller.
Yeah, I think the Democrats have long supported the Secure Fence Act of 2006 is the example that you asked for. They have long supported. They funded during the government shutdown what the president was asking for, which is not a medieval wall. It's a modern structure aimed at border security. He's now asking for steel slats. They supported it before he proposed it. Now they oppose it.
I mean, the wall's a joke, and he's changed from concrete to steel. He's moved all over the map on it, but it's basically a talking point from his campaign, and it's a trigger to say, you know, we don't want these immigrants, and we're going to keep them out. But as far as actual policy, real, concrete, rational policy goes, he's not even going to the table for that discussion.
I want to bring on another caller or two before we run out of time. Ruth is with us in Milton. Ruth, hi.
Hi. I wanted to mention that he did do a lengthy part about the American role in World War II and introduced Holocaust survivors, which was a good thing. However, he has encouraged the rise of neo-Nazism in this country. And essentially, if we don't pay attention, it's destroying this country from within. I would especially like for his supporters to think about his split thoughts. Maybe he was sincere about the survivors, but nothing can excuse that he supports Nazism.
Ruth, thanks for the call. Tommy, do you want to tackle that?
I'd be happy to. The president does not support Nazism, and I find that accusation to be rather upsetting. The president has been one of the most, actually the most pro-Israel president in recent memory. His son-in-law and his daughter, Jared, are Jewish. He does not support Nazism, and I don't think we can allow an accusation like that to stand. All of the evidence points in quite the opposite direction. And so I'm not sure the nature of the question other than to call the president a Nazi or to at least call him a Nazi supporter. And I find that to be a rather abhorrent accusation.
Ruth Conniff?
Well, I think part of the reason that the caller makes that assertion is because the president called the neo-Nazi protesters in Charlottesville very fine people. And I think that he has conducted a campaign in which he knows that there is a very aggressive right-wing white supremacist base that supports him. And he's been winking at that base the entire time he's been in office. So there's no doubt. I mean, this is why, you know, although he was able to find one person to come from Squirrel Hill from the synagogue massacre there, most of the people in that synagogue really insisted that he not come to their town because a lot of Jews think that Donald Trump is a dangerous figure who represents some very creepy elements in society that are very anti-Semitic. It's true the right-wing government of Israel likes him, and Bibi Netanyahu has big billboards of himself shaking hands with Donald Trump, who moved the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem there. It's a very provocative move. But at the same time, within the United States, he is supported by people who have some really retrograde racist and anti-Semitic views, and he knows that.
Let's bring on one more caller, Tom in Madison. Tom, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Briefly, what did you want to bring up, Tom?
Yeah, real quick. The figure that keeps getting cited by Tommy is the 70% or 70-some percent of viewers that approved of the speech. And I need to point out that, you know, me as a person who generally watches the State of the Union address could not stomach even 5 minutes of watching Donald Trump stroke his own ego last night. And I have a feeling that the vast majority of the people who were able to watch that speech were his own base of supporters. And that's why you've got a number that's up around 70%.
I have the same feeling.
Tom, thanks for the call. Tommy, a self-selecting sample, briefly?
No, I don't think so. That's a CBS News poll. I believe that they use scientifically accepted methods to make sure that it's representative of the American people. And if you'd only watched 5 minutes of the speech, I'm not sure that you can appropriately judge it. I think that if the question is about the legitimacy of the poll, I refer you to CBS News.
No, I think the question is about how many people can hang in for an hour and a half of Donald Trump blowing his own horn. And I think it's probably true. It's a pretty self-selecting group.
All right. Very briefly, 10 seconds each. Tommy, does a State of the Union address really matter?
Absolutely, it matters. I think that millions of Americans watched it, and I think that it matters. It changes the legislative agenda for the next year. I think that our president talking to our Congress is an important event, and we ought to pay attention.
And Ruth, does it matter?
I agree that it matters, and I think that that Stacey Abrams' historic rebuttal also matters, and I think we see which way things are moving in the country as a result.
Ruth, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
And Tommy, thanks a lot for taking the time.
You betcha.
That's Ruth Conniff, editor-at-large at The Progressive, and Tommy Binion, vice president of congressional and executive branch relations with the Heritage Foundation. They both joined us for a look at last night's State of the Union address. You can keep weighing in over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.